Welcome back, everybody. Today is all about Swan Mining. I'm sitting down with Khafa, CIO at Swan, was heavily involved with Swan Mining from the start. We're going to talk all about the future, what has been developed in the past, their business model, and much more. Stay tuned. All right. So like I said in the introduction, I'm sitting down with Khafa from Swan today. Hello, Khafa, first of all, how are you doing?
Hey, Yasser. Morning. How are you doing, man?
Good.
Pretty early morning here in Rio, which is great.
Yeah, we get started before the craziness kicks off. That's always exactly. Welcome. Usually I record always, you know, burning the evening oil here, going into the midnight, because everybody's sort of typically in the US. So these 11:30 starts are always welcome. We are recording at block height 828533. Our 30-day exahash is at 526. Five of that now is yours. We'll get into that. And the hash price currently at 8147. So yeah, before we get into the nitty gritty, Khafa, we have to talk about and disclose something, right? I'm not totally impartial to this. I've had a bit of input. So yeah, let's get into that first, so that we get that out of the way.
Yeah, you know, so where do I start? So let me start just saying, giving a little bit of a background of how we got into this, right? And I can get into more detail later. But since June of last year, we've been somehow involved in mining. When things really kicked off around August, September, that's when we started to deploy at full speed. But through that process, you know, I went and the whole team went through like a deep dive in everything that we could get our hands around in mining. That included, you know, podcasts, videos, from the technical to the non-technical, talking to as many people as we could. You know, we leverage a lot of the networking that we have within Swan Institutional. And through that process, you know, we met, right? And that, you know, I was an avid listener of podcasts. I still am. Love to listen to podcasts while running in the morning. And loved your podcast. Reached out to you. We talked a little bit. And you said, well, listen, I may have some sites for you guys. So, you know, our engagement started way before, you know, most people knew about it. Like in all, most of the process that we did, you know, it had a lot of secrecy around it. We didn't want people to know, and I'll get into that, why that was the case. But thanks for all the help. Thanks for the insight, and thanks for helping us scout some sites as well, particularly outside of the U.S. As I'm going to mention later, it's super important for us to look into diversification of hash rate when I have hash rate across the globe, right?
Yeah, especially with recent announcements as well coming out of America, sending a bit of a scare through the community. All right. So, but maybe let's back up one more thing. Why at all get into mining? I mean, Swan is typically brokerage. You do lots of education. You have an enormous brand presence in the space, renowned worldwide for the work that you guys do in the Bitcoin only segment. Why mining? Why was that the next logical step?
Yeah. You know, let me give one step back, start from why we started diversifying and going through other business and other revenue lines, right? So if you look, let's go back a year and a half ago, and Swan's business was only one business. We were selling Bitcoin to clients and had, or two, right? Because we had the education and media arm of the company as well. But in terms of revenue lines, we had one revenue line, which was selling Bitcoin to clients. And by the way, we only have a buy button on our site. We don't even have a sell button. So for traders and people that want to be active, this is feature, not a bug, right? They can't trade with us. You know, Bitcoin, you cannot trade in Bitcoin long term. I think everybody gets wrecked if they're trading in Bitcoin. But anyway, a little bit of a tangent here. But so we looked at the business, we're like, so where else should we go if we want to be a Bitcoin-only company, right, that is successful out there, which, by the way, it's the business model that we believe is the only sustainable one in the long term, right? Instead of, you know, looking at 10 different things, 10 different projects, 100 different things that are happening, you know, we just focus on Bitcoin. There is a lot in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the best monetary asset that we're always going to see, right? I don't think, you know, there's anything that is going to ever come close to that. So why not just focus our attentions and, you know, efforts on Bitcoin? So that's what we did. I mean, this is in the core of Swan. I think Swan, first and foremost, the first thing that we want to do is make sure that we increase Bitcoin adoption across the globe, right? So through that path, we've been discussing, and this is not new. Corey put out an article, I think, more than a year ago, talking about his plans to bring Swan public, right? And how we're going to do that. So we've been brainstorming a lot how to look into other revenue lines, how to look into other verticals inside of the Bitcoin ecosystem, right? And a lot of this was dictated, I think, by, of course, our own thinking, but most of it was coming from our clients, from investors, from people that are talking with us. Say, yeah, you know, I want to invest on this, or I have interest on this, or here's a business opportunity, right? So this was the seed to create what we now call Swan Institutional, and I got into details in that. Which was exactly that. Like, I think Swan, in a sense, is a company that almost was born upside down, because we created a very good brand first, a very good distribution network, right? But we really didn't have a product. Most cases, what you see is that, you know, a company will have a product and then they will build all the rest, right? For us, and you know, this is great, actually, we started in the opposite direction. So through the brand, through the online presence, right? I think Swan has the strongest brand in Bitcoin today. And that just attracted a lot of flow, a lot of deal flow to us, a lot of different things. And so answering your questions, it became natural, I think, to go to mining. Not only something that we've been interested for a while, and Corey was at Riot's board for a while, Yan as well was on their board. So, and we've been somewhat involved. Last year, through the beginning of the year, so I think, oh, maybe, you know, on Pacific Bitcoin, when we do our own conference, maybe the first day we do a mining day, that's going to be an opportunity for us to get closer to people. When we started planning all of that, we really didn't know that Swan Mining was going to take off the way that it did, and it was going to take shape the way that it did. But we thought it was an opportunity to sit down with some of the largest mining companies out there, understand what they're doing, you know, see if there were opportunities, and just engage with them. Then around June of last year, as I said, there are a lot of opportunities to come to us, people with their companies, new business, looking to raise capital, looking to deploy different things. So there was one that caught our attention, which was a mining company, right? So they came to us, they were looking to raise capital. We looked at everything they were doing, we liked it. And say, yeah, as an investment, looks good. Completely passive investment at this point, right? We weren't mining, we were just going to invest in a mining company. So that made sense to do. And through the due diligence process of understanding the company, understanding the people, understanding the state of the network, right? There were a few things that really caught our attention in the mining world. This was June of last year, right? So as we're looking through the prices of machines at the ASICs out there, you know, we saw that they were hitting like what we thought, and, you know, it's early, but so far it seems to have been true, like a rock bottom. So we decided to start acquiring some machines on the side, right? Said, okay, looks like very cheap. Maybe we'll just buy these machines as a flip. We'll store them. And then end of the year, who knows, maybe we sell some of these machines, right? But it just seemed like a good opportunity. That led, again, to other discussions with other investors, right? You know, some investors were more interested than others. And, you know, at the end of the day, we saw that there was interest for something like that. And that's how Swan Mining was born, you know, initially, just with the thesis of acquiring machines. And the last thing I'll say, and then I'll stop here so you can ask more questions. The whole reason why we've been very quiet about this, it's exactly because of that, because we started buying machines. We were very worried in the beginning that we were going to move prices, right? We talked about this in the past, right? And as we started to buy them, it's like, yeah, you know, if we just start disclosing who we are, what we are doing, and people have any idea of the size of what we're trying to do, if that leaks out, you know, it's game over, prices are going to shot up, right up, right? Very hard to know, you know, how much we wanted to buy landed inventory. That was super important for us, because time to deployment was, you know, relevant, and it still is, particularly ahead of the halving. So as we were doing that, again, to buy landed inventory in the US of the machines that we wanted, we really didn't know how deep or how thin the market was at the time, right? Therefore, why we were so quiet and secretive about it.
Before I get into you know, why make it public now, I guess, and so here's the question is, mining sites are not often readily available, you know, especially now with the ETFs coming and stuff, people are getting more into mining in general, and you don't often find, you know, 50 megawatt site waiting for people to come online. It's typically like you have discussions, they'll be built, maybe they're ready in 1 or 2 months from now, and then they're starting to be marketed and stuff like that. Why was buying futures of S21s, for instance, at low prices? You can get, I think, June futures of S21s for $16 right now. Why is that not an option in saying, hey, you know, there's a site coming online in that same sort of time frame? Why did you not get into those at all? Why did it have to be landed inventory specifically?
Yeah. So 3 points here to address, right? So let's talk first about the sites. The other thing that surprised us when we started going through this process was that I think through the last 18 months, right? And particularly, remember, this when we started was around July, August. We actually saw a lot of availability of sites that were ready to deploy. Why? Because we saw, you know, a very bad cycle of miners going bankrupt, miners getting out. So there were some pretty good sites, you know, out there that were available, ready to deploy. So, and that was to our surprise as well. I think the initial thesis was similar to what you're saying. Yeah, it's going to take time. You know, we're going to develop relationships. We're going to get out there. Some of these sites, we're going to have to develop them, fix them, right? But again, to our surprise, that wasn't the case. But even before that, right, you asked why doing it quickly? Well, the answer is, you know, what's going to happen in less than 90 days now, right? The halving. So before the halving, it's super critical to us to deploy, because it's simple. The opportunity cost is massive, right? So we made some, you know, quick back of the envelope math in the beginning. Say, yeah, if we wait, you know, 1 month, 2 months to deploy, even if we get sites that are not 100%, maybe they are at like, I'm exaggerating because they're not, but let's say maybe they are at like 70% of time, that's still better than waiting 1-2 months before deploying, because at least we're mining ahead of the halving, yeah. Right? And when we get to the halving, our break-evens are going to be better, right? And that thesis proved to be right. And I can get, remind you, I can get through, like, you know, how we're thinking about this, you know, the stages that we went through and where we're going with this. Then your final point around S21s and other machines, you know, I don't think one thing excludes the other. We may still be buying, you know, other machines for future sites that we're deploying, particularly to the S21s. I would rather wait a little bit to see how the machines really are going to come out, right? We know that usually first batches, they have issues. So let's see how they come out. We already heard some rumors that that's been the case. You know, who knows? I mean, there's so much noise in the mining industry. Yeah, we saw, you know, people posting screenshots saying, yeah, you know, the machine shut down at high temperatures. So yeah. I mean, we'll see all of that. We'll see how that plays out. But we always rather wait, see how that works, and then acquire the machines. And the reality is, if you go with S19Ks right now, you know, they're good enough for all of our sites. They're fairly efficient machine. They're very good bang for your buck, right? And in terms of NPV and break evens and return on investment, it's a very good machine, right? You can't really beat that today. And I can buy, you know, thousands of S19Ks, while, you know, S21s, I'm going to have to wait. So when you put into the calculation the fact that I can mine, same thing, I can start mining right now compared to buying an option and waiting to see how that's going to land, you know, that's just not what we were doing up until now. We may for the future, but for now, deployment, getting to market was super, super important to us. And the fact is that, you know, we had arguably what is the fastest deployment in Bitcoin history, right? We went to 0 to a little bit above 5 exahashes now in super, super fast time. And we couldn't have done that, you know, if we started to really build infrastructure, go from the ground up, wait for machines, right? So, yeah, so that's how we got where we are.
now that the word is out, you might, that strategy of how to acquire what machines might also change, right? You see these big public miners, everybody obviously knows they're mining, not just because they have to put out monthly reporting, but I mean, they get special conditions, right? If they order a pre-order 10,000 machines from Bitmain, they also get conditions around what happens if the machines arrive DOA, you know? That's not something that you can as easily have access to, you know, when you're sort of in stealth mode and nobody really knows what you're doing, then you just pay sort of what the market gives you, right? But anyway, so...
Yes, and no. And this goes back also to having, I think, very good networking through Swan Institutional. We've engaged very early with people that have been doing mining for a long period of time. We made good partnerships. So when they were approaching, you know, Bitmain or whoever it was, brokers, whoever it was, right, they brought their credibility alongside. So that made it much easier to get the things that you just mentioned. You know, everything we bought had the Bitmain warranty. You know, in some cases, we actually had to change significant part of the fleet. They did very quickly. And this is part, again, if it goes back to the same thing, you're going to see, I'm going to mention the same thing because it's when I look at all this process, this is the, I think the common theme is having a very strong brand, good relationships, good distribution makes all the difference. So all of this thing, the things that, you know, we've been building at Swan for not for the last 6 months, like mining, right, but for the last, you know, few years are thankfully, I think, paying dividends for us.
So all the positive effects that you've now mentioned, that you sort of enjoyed while it was in the happening in the background, why announce it now at 4.5 exahash? Why not wait until it's 6.15 or
the full 8? I think part of it, so we've been very open about this. We want to make the company public. When that's going to happen, we don't know yet, but we want Swan to go public at some point. And why goes back to what I said, right? We truly think it's super important to have a Bitcoin only company, that it's out there, that it's public, and that it proves that this is a viable long-term business, right? Which it is. Not only I think it's viable, it is the on the long term, it is the only sustainable business. If you start losing your attention, going to other directions, right? And we've seen that. We've seen time and time again that, you know, these companies don't have very promising long term, right? They may be very good in the short term, but in the long term, you end up with other issues. So we've been vocal about that. We've known that that's what we want, right? We've also, as a core of what we do, is transparency. So in this case, the only reason I said that we didn't disclose was because we wanted to acquire the machines. So after we put that out of the way, we acquired the machines, we set up most of the sites, a lot of our concerns went away. And then we started sharing some numbers on Swan Institutional, right? Because that's the part that we should go back to. But mining is one vertical of Swan Institutional. It is, of course, the fastest growing one right now, but it's the largest. But Swan Institutional is going to be, I think, much bigger than, significantly bigger than just mining, right? So we put numbers out there and what Swan is doing, how we're thinking about doing an IPO, why it makes sense to do an IPO, or initial size that, you know, makes a lot of sense to get to an IPO. We started disclosing numbers, right? And of course that led to some questions and it's like, yeah, maybe there's no downside now in announcing mining. Super, for me, it was super interesting to look from afar and see the comments on Bitcoin Twitter when we put the numbers out and people just making wild speculations of, you know, where the revenue is coming from, how much Bitcoin we should be selling together. And very few people, I actually don't think I saw anybody guessing that we were mining, which was, if you stop to think about it, it's the only thing that would have made sense to have the numbers that we had, right? You know, no other business other than maybe lending could get us there. Other than
that, but in retrospect, Kafa, in retrospect, everything is obvious, right?
Yeah, but people in mining that didn't know we were mining, there were a couple of them that speculated, like, oh, maybe Swan is mining, you know. And but even people, a lot of people in mining had no idea, right? I mean, as you know, we were very quiet, and I think we were very efficiently in being quiet and effective about being quiet about this. So the timing was just right to disclose it. You know, maybe we should have disclosed it even a little earlier, but I think the timing was just right. It was about time. You know, we will disclose more, and we will disclose, you know, even more information as we go public. For, you know, for sure we need to. And the on top of that, I said this is aligned with our principles. We give transparency, and maybe we give too much transparency, but we always are on the side of giving too much transparency to investors, to people inside Swan, right? They know everything that is happening. Our investors can see our hash rate. They can see, you know, what's happening, like through the vehicles. They see, you know, exactly what's happening with everything that we're doing, which leads, you know, I keep mentioning this, it leads to kind of like a paradox of transparency, which is you give too much transparency, it leads to a lot of questions, it leads to a lot of speculation and a lot of inquiry. But I think it's okay, and it makes us much stronger in the long term. You know, and the reality is if we're not able to answer questions, maybe our decision process needs to be adjusted, right? And it really helps us to think about, you know, what we're doing, how we're doing it. So goes back to the same thing, the power of having very, you know, smart people, very good investors, they're backing us, they're looking at what we're doing, asking the hard questions, right? And driving us, I think, in the directions that are the ones that so far have paid off for us.
Yeah, Bob Burnett, who I highly respect in the space, in response to the EIA announcement, came out and said, hey, like, I'm no longer disclosing how many megawatts I have, how many exahashes I have, petahashes, whatever, because people can just derive too much information from it, and it can bite you in the ass in the long term, right? So this is a question that I wanted to ask later. But maybe pulling that forward, you've seen the announcement, right? Is that something that you guys are worried about? Does that make you reconsider the level of risk that comes with mining in the US? Maybe we can go into where the machines are located and under what sort of business model, since you don't own any sites yourself yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned with something like that, but not only because of mining, but on, you know, on a much broader perspective, right? You know, the government shouldn't be telling us how to use or not to use energy. That should be, you know, everybody's decision. There are other industries like, you know, artificial intelligence are using multiples of what Bitcoin is using. They're growing much faster, right? They use water as well. And nobody's questioning that yet, right? They will, I think they will, but nobody, and even if they did, that doesn't make it right, right? Nobody should be questioning how energy is used. It's a free market, and that's the way it should be. So that worries me. That gives signs of a lot of the things that as Bitcoiners, you know, we are worried about. We want, you know, governments to have less power in terms of things like this. And this is why we Bitcoin. Goes back to the origin of why we mine also, right? Even before that. Is because we Bitcoin, right? And we think it's super important to have this, what's probably the most important technology that we've ever seen, to protect it and make sure that it thrives and make sure that it gets adopted, right? So it absolutely worries me. Do I think this has legs? Probably not. Are we going to fight it? Yeah, you bet we are. You know, I think there are going to be people coming out there with responses, and we're working on that as well. But I don't think that has legs anyway. But through that process, it's just more bad press, bad rhetoric that is getting out there. People talking about the wrong things about Bitcoin, right? And we'll have to adjust. But everything at the end of the day, everything's good for Bitcoin, even that, because we're going to get out of this with people knowing better that Bitcoin is actually good for grid balancing and all the things that we know, right? And maybe in the next time that something like this is proposed, it just gets shut down immediately because, you know, everybody knows that this is not going to go anywhere, and it's just stupid. It doesn't make any sense. It actually contradicts everything that they're trying. What they were doing, what trying to do was right, and if they had the power to do that, this is not the way to do it. They're just shooting themselves in the foot because they're going to end up with a much less reliable grid, you know. So again, it's part of the educational process. We've seen that with Bitcoin as an asset. We continue to see that with Bitcoin and as an asset. And everything's good for Bitcoin, man. At the end of the day, this is just going to lead to more people being educated about the qualities and the benefits.
Of yeah. Anti-fragility, right? It's good that Bitcoin yep. and Bitcoin mining is so nice and anti-fragile. Okay. But going back to the US, Khafa, let's get into where the machines are currently, where the four, five exahashes are operating. Yep. Let's talk about diversification globally as well.
By the way, I read Bob's tweet as well, and it made me reflect, because we've been very vocal recently about what we are doing. Since we don't own the sites, it's not even clear, you know, if we need to disclose anything or not. But anyway, we will own some sites very soon. Today, as I said, like we started all of this looking, you know, funny enough, outside of the US, right? So we started looking at other countries, the opportunity I mentioned, you know, was in Australia. We looked at everything that we could do and really, really liked that. But after we acquired the machines, right, and we looked at the US has, you know, a major, I think, advantage to other countries, which is the infrastructure is mostly ready and it's very quick to deploy, right? We can't get very, very hard to get, you know, maybe a 100-megawatt site that it's like ready to deploy. In the US, we found these sites, you know, close to 100 megawatts, ready to deploy. We could get machines there hashing in 2 weeks if we wanted to, right? And we did. Very hard to find that, you know, outside of the US. So things scale here very quickly. So that's why we deployed a lot of hash rate in the US in the beginning. Our hash rates across the US, so we are right now, you know, in 7 different sites. We're expanding to 10 sites by March across pretty much, you know, all the top states that you would think about in terms of Bitcoin mining, right? One of the principles that we've stick to from the beginning is to try, since we are new to mining, we're trying a lot of different things, right? So we do a lot of R&D, and that's not only on the technical machine side, but also on sites and, you know, trying to understand who the site managers out there, who are the good ones, who are bad operators, right? Which technologies are better, which are worse. So that was part of what we did also. We went out there and we found out, you know, there's some very good operators out there, and we're trying these ones that we found out were good operators. We're trying to get, you know, closer and closer to them, working on strategic partnerships. Again, another huge advantage of having Swan Institutional is that having these conversations, we can actually bring opportunity to restructure debt, to look into their balance sheet, to help, you know, some of these sites that are struggling, that have very good assets, very good energy availability, right, but just don't have access to capital. So helping with that has been, I think, and through the process, you know, working on strategic partnerships that would work for us, right? So yeah, we bring capital here, we restructure the site, we'll get the site much better, but you're going to secure for us, you know, this amount of available power for the next few years, that this amount of, we're going to do a PPA with you, right? So, you know, there are all these opportunities that are open because of that, because of these discussions, right? And this is the reason why we've tried different sites. On the other side of the spectrum, we had sites that, you know, we got there, we were promised a lot of things, right? And then, you know, pumps didn't work, or, you know, the engineering wasn't great and we had to fix and we had to adjust, right? That's part of any business. When you start the business, there, things are going to go right, things are going to go wrong. You know, 90% of what we're doing so far has been going right, but then it's going wrong. We shut that down, we move ahead, and, you know, we're going to move that those machines to somewhere where we're hashing better than on these sites, right? But just going a little bit deeper into that, as I said, we're trying different things, right? And that goes for machine types that we're using, that goes through control boards that we may be using, that goes through firmware, that goes through cooling technology. We're using air, we're using one-phase immersion, we're looking to two-phase immersion, right? So we're trying everything. And again, new technologies, you have to do that, right? You're going to throw 10 things, and in any startup, you do that. And when it's a startup, a new technology, you have to do that, right? There's no other way around. And we're learning a lot with that, and learning a lot through that process. You know, I'll tell you, like, our top site went from when we deployed, we were hashing at like 80% uptime. Now we are at 99% uptime, hashing at 104% of the machine stock's stock average hash rate, right? So this is the standard that we want across the fleet, and we brought very good people to do that. That's where we're heading, I think, in the future. The other thing, just to finalize, that we found out through this process, like right in the beginning, I'll tell you a story. So right in the beginning, when we started doing this, Again, it was all in stealth mode. We couldn't tell people a lot of what we were doing, but we needed to hire people, right? I needed to get people to help us on doing analysis of new business, site analysis, contract management, right? All of those things. And the first thing I did, I went to Twitter. And by then, you know, I was doing mostly a lot of research and analytics for Swan. And I just posted something saying, yeah, you know, I need somebody to help me, you know, doing some analysis on mining, understanding the financial side of mining, right? And it was a flood of people applying for that, which is crazy. Just through Twitter, just a tweet. I sent a tweet, right? Yeah. Which again, the power of having, I think, a very strong online presence, you know, pays out on periods like that. And we made our first hire from there. We hired San. San is amazing. He's really, really good. He's been, you know, employee number one with mine. You've met him. And yeah, so, and then a couple of people came.
South African, by the way, Khafa. No surprise.
Another South African.
Shout out to San.
And so through that again, and that day when I got, when I sent that tweet out, I got like, there were like four or five people that I really liked, that, you know, had background, were really, and these are people that when they come to you, they're Bitcoiners already. They love this, right? It's a natural filter. They're going to work as hard as all of us are working on this, because at the end of the day, we all have, you know, a common goal, which is same thing. Let's drive Bitcoin adoption, right? And then at the same time, you know, there's somebody else who came to me and say, yeah, I know I'm, like everything guys are doing, you know, but this person was a little bit more technical. So when we deployed, when we had the sites ready, right, I reached out again and I said, oh, now we're looking for somebody with a little bit more technical experience. And then Carr came back to me and said, yeah, that's me, man. You know, I know the first time around and it was more on the financial side, but on the technical side, I have a lot of technical knowledge. And these are guys that, you know, again, the level of experience, it's just substantial. And then he started optimizing the sites, going side by side, getting the sites better. We brought Brad in late last year as well. So the team is growing. We have around 10 people right now. They're helping us with mining, but for a long period of time, it was basically like four people running this from top down, which is insane. We didn't have many weekends. We didn't have many nights, but, it's part of it. It's part of launching any new business. And now it's going through increasing the efficiencies, building the team, right, and actually scaling this, so it's, you know, much bigger than it is right now. But goes back to the same thing. It was super important to do all of that, maybe cut a little bit of corners before the halving, right, because getting ahead of the game before the halving, having machines deployed, made us, you know, build a Bitcoin treasury that we wouldn't otherwise, right? So yeah, that's been our focus.
I think it was mentioned on, I forget what news, I think it was Bloomberg. What's Bloomberg? I might get this wrong. 750 Bitcoin or more, you guys mined already?
Yeah, that we have mined. It's more than that right now, but yeah, that we've mined in total. And growing, right? Yeah. Because remember, the curve is, you know, at the beginning we were mining very little, now we're mining much more. So I have a dashboard with a lot of numbers. You've seen it. I look at two numbers every day, right? I look at pretty much all the day. It's the number of exahash that I have deployed. These are the most important numbers for me, and the amount of Bitcoin that we're stacking every day, right? The rest, it's super important, but these are the top numbers that I have to look, you know, I have them on my screen pretty much every
day. When you wake up and before you go to sleep. Yeah.
Oh, 24/7. Like I usually have up on this TV here, our dashboard, of course, is not there right now. And yeah, we're monitoring everything. This is another thing. I'm very data and analytics oriented. You know, I have a background in doing a lot of this in Wall Street. I was a derivatives trader. So I'm a banker that can code, which probably makes me a very bad banker and a very bad coder. But it gives me a skill set to cross, I think, both worlds. And we track everything that we do, like, you know, from the machine level to see, you know, how machines are operating, which is, of course, obvious. Everybody does that. But then, you know, we've built a Bitcoin network operating system that has more like you know, a forest view. Look at the sites, how all the sites are performing, which sites are performing better than others, you know, within the sites, you know, which containers are better than the others. So we're looking at all of these different things, all of this data, different data, going through analytics. And I think this is a good segue to a topic that I know you want to talk about. So I've built something where we see the amount, you know, all the way, you see the flow of the Bitcoin, right? So from energy all the way to the wallet, right? What happens in between, and to see if there's leakage anywhere and see if, you know, if there's something happening that it shouldn't be happening. So we look at, you know, here's the amount of energy that we're deploying, right? From each machine, right? First of all, how many machines are online? How many are offline, right? From the machines that are online, you know, what's their average stock hash rate, and you know, or the hashing at the average, so we get your efficiency, right? Then after that, it's literally a sand key diagram that you can visually see, like Bitcoins from energy all the way to wallet, right? Then the important point, going to the pools, right, and say, okay, so how much hash rate we're deploying to each of the pools through this process? You know, we've tried not only different technology, we've also been trying different pools, right? And then looking at, after we deploy to the pool, how much did we get paid in terms of Bitcoins, right? And, you know, the block reward, it's easy to calculate, right? You get 625 and that's it. You know, there's no discrepancy there. But what happens when you've deployed hash rate to a pool for a full week, right? And you look at the average transaction fees that that pool has found, and, you know, you find out that how much you're getting paid, you know, has huge discrepancies to those amounts. Why is that happening, right? So this data being, this data process led us through, you know, questioning things that most people don't question, right? And to try to look into the detail of the detail and really understand what's happening in the background. And the reality is that there are no good answers for a lot of these things out there, right? Which probably means that, you know, most pools have some flexibility. I'm not saying they play games, but some they have flexibility around how much they pay to the miners, right? Because as a miner, I don't know, you know, I know the blocks that were found through that period, but we don't know exactly, you know, how they're paying it, right? And we've seen instances like where it makes it obvious, like F2 pool, when they found that block that had, you know, a lot of Bitcoins, 80 something Bitcoins on the block, and decided to give back those fees, right? I mean, first of all, this shouldn't be a decision of the pool, right? This should be a decision of the miners, because it's not their hash rate. They're just, you know, looking over it, and there should be a conduit to what's happening. So that kind of scares me. Like when I see this amount of power, goes back to what we were talking about, you know, consolidating power with government. It's the same thing. You have a concentration of power here. That people just shouldn't have the ability to do this, right or wrong. I'm taking aside the ethics of the decision, right? Is it ethical to return the fees? Probably. But again, that decision shouldn't be falling with the miner, right? Even if you decided to do that with the pool, you should decide it should be with the miner. So.
Yeah, look, I mean, I have a couple of, if you like, I have a couple of thoughts around that, right? So I don't know. I think, again, free market, right? One pool might do it differently than the other. That's why Bitcoin mining is beautiful, right? We can send our hash rate wherever we want to, right?
Yep.
And we're not forced to send it anywhere. So if one pool decides to do that, you know, they might do it again in the future, which might result in less hash rate going to them, which means less fees, which means less revenue for the pool. There's a lot of things, like what about off-band transactions? You know, there's rumors in the industry that some pools will take private payments and then include certain transactions. You can only look back, right?
Happening.
You cannot forecast revenue.
That's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. And that will skew your revenues, right? So all of a sudden, your expectations are way off from what you're actually getting. And there's a bunch of other stuff. So the only way around Khafa, is to do your own pool, which is something that Mara has done, right? I interviewed Charlie Schumacher, and we talked about how they did that because they wanted to have a certainty around what transactions they included, because they're public and certain transactions they just legally cannot process, right?
Yep.
And so that's why they did that. Is that something you'd be looking into, doing your own pool so you can control the revenue more closely?
This is where we started. We fought in the beginning. Yeah, you know, we were getting to a point that, you know, probably going to have enough hash rate to just have our own pool. And, you know, by the end of this year, we're probably going to have more than enough hash rate to do that. But then when we look at something like what OceanPool is doing, right, the reality is that if you have a model of where Ocean, not where they are today, but where they're going, which is they're going to give the block template creation back to the miners, right? And this is in their short-term roadmap to do that. So when that happens, there's no reason for us not to use a pool like that, right? Because we can still create our own blocks, and we are also going to get the benefit of having other miners that are coming in that if they find a block, we're going to get paid on that as well, right? So this is a little bit, I think it's kind of a way to think about this is almost like the open source version of what Marathon was doing. Because in the beginning, they were actually giving it access to other people, but other people coming in didn't have the option to create their own block templates, right? Here, everybody on the pool is going to be able to create their block templates. And when I look at Ocean, this is one of the things, honestly, that attracts me the most about the model is that the fact that everybody coming in there is going to have this ability. I think having the knowledge, understanding how to do that early on is going to be a key differentiator for miners, right? There is going to be a market out there for block space and, you know, for getting ahead of the queue, if you will, right? People are going to pay for that. And I think that's fine. You know, that's it's a market to do that. Mempool, you know, if they're accelerator are doing that, right? I mean, there are going to be, I think, different options. There are things that are going to happen in that market that I can tell we don't even know yet, because any new market, when it comes out, right, you think it's going to go in one direction. There are all these new products that come out that we don't even think about. But fundamentally, when I step back and I look at, you know, when we look at Bitcoin, I think Satoshi created scarcity in two different assets, right? One is the obvious one, sats. But the other one is on block space, right? Block space is a very scarce real estate, and that's going to lead to people paying to get in front of queues. So let's say, for example, maybe, I don't know, fast forward 3 years in the future, and we decide that, you know, we're going to sell like a fast pass to an institution that really needs to write their and confirm their transactions quick, right? So they're going to pay us a subscription fee. You know, every year you can say, all right, we're going to pay you this amount of money. And then every time that I have a transaction, you guys guarantee that, you know, whenever you find a block, my transactions are going to go first in your block, right? So I'm pretty sure there's going to be a market for that. How is that going to be structured? If it's going to be, you know, in the form of futures, derivatives, just to pay, you know, pay to get ahead. I don't know. And I think it's early for that. But it's key for us to be early and start learning about how to do that and how to do that properly. And going back, this is one of the reasons why I like what Ocean is doing. You know, take aside, same thing, all the discussion around, you know, if the template that they're using now is right or wrong, you know, not even going to go there. That doesn't really matter for us in the long term, which, by the way, even if it did, people say it's not economical, but it actually is, because the difference is not that big in terms of transaction fees. It's marginal, right? And they're not charging any pool fees. So even for, you know, for small miners, it makes a lot of sense right now. And in the long term, it's just a muted point, because it doesn't matter. We're going to construct our own blocks, and we're going to put, you know, whatever we want in front, or we're going to exclude whatever we want as a miner, right? And the beauty of having, I think, hash rate diversification is that some miners are going to do templates in one way, others in others. Most of the times, you know, because as you said, it's a free open market, and, you know, economics always, you know, talk, money talks at the end of the day. People are going to do what's most economical.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Look, what I want people to take away from this segment is, you know, it's not just, oh, we got our ASICs now, we connect them to pools, and then we mine Bitcoin. There's a bunch of nuance around every single step before the sats hit your wallet, right? And everything is debatable. Like you just said earlier, you could think about a subscription model. Now you need to weigh off, you know, how much.
Yes, I'll tell you a story, because I think it's a good one on the other side.
Okay, go ahead.
There is a pool, very small pool, that got, somebody told us to use them because they were very good. They're doing merge mining, right? Which means they point hash rate to all different coins out there, right? And then try to optimize to, you know, they're even point to, like, I think Bitcoin Cash at some point was the most profitable chain to be. So they'll do all of this, right? So we looked at that. I was skeptical, like, okay, let's do it. Let's take a look. And then like everything else, let's try and let's measure, right? There is a huge problem with that model. In order, the algorithm that they set up, right? They're gonna, when they make the determination, am I gonna hash, you know, with these different proof of work chains, which one am I gonna do? To make that calculation, they necessarily need to make an assumption in terms of how much transaction fees they're gonna be receiving in each of the chains, right? When you are in a period where transaction fees are low and not very volatile, that's not a problem. But when you go in a period like what we've seen, you know, late last year, where transaction fees are ridiculous high and volatility is ridiculous high. So one block you have massive fees, the other have lower fees, right? It becomes impossible for these algorithms to perform. So we looked at the numbers, we compared to what was happening. And again, this was in a very specific period where volatility was very high, but just to prove a point that, you know, why it's important to measure everything, they were underperforming by more than 10% in total rewards, you know. Which is massive. It's significant, right? It's not 10% of transaction fees, 10% of total reward, right? And again, because they weren't really looking at it in the right way. And maybe long term, this is a better, mining pool to be using. I don't think it is, but I'm not even arguing with that. But in periods of very high transaction fees and very high volatility, that is definitely not the case.
Yeah. I mean, right now, certainly there will be people who say, what Swan does merge mining, blah, 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 they support shitcoins, right? But this is often the case, you know, which I'm not saying, but I understand.
By the way, shitcoins with that, because what happens is that you mine them and you sell them right away for Bitcoin, right?
So yeah, you could argue that for a certain period you give Bitcoin Cash added security and increase the security for it that will increase, you know, that circular thing, increase the security budget and so on. But what I'm saying is that and this is interesting also for Swan to come into mining, I think, is that often in the industry of Bitcoin mining, nothing but where can I make, you know, as much money per kilowatt hour counts. That's why you see so many miners go into AI as well, right? Because they differentiate. And at the end of the day, they're in the business of transforming electricity into revenue for the most money they can. And then you will see that ethos of, you know, supporting the Bitcoin network sometimes takes partly a back seat when it comes to how much money can we make with the money that we're given. And so, you know, you have to have your thesis. And again, that is, you know, what we talked about before, free market playing out, different actors having different approaches. And my opinion, right, is always longevity, think long term. You know, that's what Bitcoin kind of is inherently, and that's what it will support, and punish any short-term thinking, any short-term approaches, like we have seen with, you know, 10% debts and machines as collateral. That is heavily punished, as we've seen, right? So it's all about longevity, having your sort of strategy full stack, vertically, being vertically integrated, controlling a lot of the supply chain, basically trying out different things like you guys are, right? Different cooling technologies, heat reuse, demand response, all of that stuff. Have the network to try it all out and stuff like that. And one part, and maybe we can get into a bit of a quick fire around Khafa before we close out. One other strain.
You are absolutely right. I think everybody, you know, makes decisions in this industry thinking that they are the most economical decisions. But what we found out is that there are a lot of people that are very short-term oriented, right? And they need to be. Like, there are some, you know, miners and people out there that they need to pay bills every month, right? And they may have, you know, a huge burden because they have debt on their heads. And that may lead to short-term oriented decisions that will optimize things for the short term. They will not optimize things for the long term, right? And that goes with technology, that goes with pools, that goes with every different thing. Going back to, I think, one of the disadvantages of using a pool like Ocean is that you don't get paid, you know, until they find a block. And that's, you know, for people that have, you know, limitations on capital that need to pay bills in some of these cases, every day, right? You know, they have to settle bills every day, in most cases every week, you know, or every month. it's hard, you know, if they're going to fight the block, you know, where, how they're going to come up with the cap. So if these people are making the right economical decision because they can't, you know, jeopardize their business. So my point is that in the, depending on where you are, depending on your structure, the decisions of one player is going to be very different than decisions of the others. And this is one of the key reasons of why when we're setting this up, we're setting the whole structure, we're trying to do it in a way that, you know, all the interests are aligned from all of our investors all the way to the poor, the mine, the site operators to us, right? So that at the end of the day, we know that we can operate in with the long-term interest in mind and not short-term. Like all the vehicles that we set up for mining, they're completely segregated from Swan. They're independent vehicles. There's no debt in these. They're all equity vehicles, right? So we're not paying 11, 12, 15, 20% interest rate as people are paying out there. We're going to give up some of our upside, but that's fine. Because, you know, when we're happy, our investors are happy, and they're going to come back and, you know, give us more money when this, you know, takes off and really succeeds. And if it doesn't, it's equity, right? So bad, really bad, but we know what the downside risk is for everybody.
Yeah. Let's get into a couple of quick fire questions here. What I wanted to lead into just now was, you know, additional revenue and diversification, not just of geography, but also revenue streams. Will Swan Mining offer hosting to private clients, to retail?
No, never. We don't think that's a good business. I shouldn't say never, but not in the short term, not in the medium term. That's not something we envision doing. You know, what we've seen out there in these models are very hard to replicate. You know, they tend to clients getting very disappointed. I mean, it's not something, we don't do that well. We don't know how to manage that. You know, it's very far from what we're doing now. There are some people that do it well out there. It's not us. We're not going to do that. I think that's going to deviate too much from our focus.
Okay, gotcha. Outside of America, where are you looking next? What's sort of the top of the list?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw some countries out there that we've looked at. I mean, they're the obvious ones. I'm from Brazil, which is interesting, right? I mean, when I look at because I know all the issues with Brazil, even though I know there's cheap electricity here, that's being kind of not somewhere we've been very, very active on. But, you know, our neighbors, Paraguay, there's some things we've looked at. There's also, you know, we're looking, as I said at the beginning, Australia. I think that's a good market as well. Norway. Yeah, like several countries out there that we're looking into opportunities. It's harder to, we need to find a good place that has, you know, good rule of law, you know, stable in the long term, but at the same time has availability, is looking to embrace the mining industry, right? So that's been part of our due diligence as well, you know, before moving to these countries, really understanding, you know, what is the risk of us sending machines there, you know, machines getting confiscated or whatever it is, right? That's a risk definitely we don't want to be taking. Even if electricity is, you know, 1 cent, 2 cents, sometimes it's just not worth it, and it's reputational as well. So yeah, that's kind of like what's being on top of our mind.
Do you guys plan on putting out any educational offers? You know, as you said before, there's a lot of Bitcoiners that read on this. You know, I count myself to be in the sort of same spectrum where I don't operate, you know, large mining facilities or anything, but I feel like I know a hell of a lot of theory when it comes to education and economics and technicals. But there's a certain limit that you hit, you know, before you have to sort of start doing it yourself and actually experience what it means and apply your knowledge. Do you plan on, you know, educating people more on the mining side when it comes to financials and stuff like that?
100%. That's the core of what Swan does, right? We want to make sure that we put good educational pieces out there, you know, a lot of material. So we are working on a couple of things. Mining is kind of interesting, right? And weird in a sense that I see a lot of people, and I include myself on this, that they've been in Bitcoin for a long time. They've been doing different things in Bitcoin. They've been got as technical as it can get on, you know, all the way from the monetary side, sometimes all the way to, you know, the Bitcoin core and really understanding what's happening. But then when you talk about mining is almost like this thing, you know, that it's a side that it's not really paid too much attention, just happens, right? And we want to change a little bit of that and bring more people into understanding why mining, from the fundamentals and why mining is important, right? Why it's important not only for Bitcoin, but, you know, for, as we said, for grid balancing and all these other things, right? All the way to really understanding, you know, the dynamics of it. And the technology is just fascinating, just on the technology itself, right? I mean, for people that love technology, there's so much happening in mining, so much innovation, right? I think the way we see machines today, it's going to be very different than the way that we see, you know, machines in 5 years from now. Sites are going to be very different as well, right? You know, I think they're going to be much more modular and compact and, you know, than they are right now with the shoe boxes and all of that. I mean, everybody talks about that, but I really think that that's coming. And we've been actually actively engaged in trying to understand these technologies really, really well, because this is super fascinating to see, you know, what happens if you just have a huge, you know, immersion tank and you can just put boards across and one control board controlling, like, you know, hundreds of different hashing boards, right? So, I mean, this part by itself is super fascinating, and we plan to write something on this with time. It's been crazy because we just haven't, you know, we actually wanted to write something at the end of the year on mining. And we just haven't had time, right? You know this, we invited you to help us on it as well. But it's something we should do because it's in the core of what we do at Swan, right?
It's coming. We're on a good path now, I think. all right, two last questions, Rafa. Is there, first of all, anything that we haven't gone into that you would like to leave here for people?
Yeah, I think there's one piece we haven't touched, and you actually asked me and I didn't answer. So in terms of revenue diversification and what else we're looking at. So remember, we built Swan Mining as a part of Swan Institutional, right? So Swan Institutional has different pieces to it. So today we have, you know, a Bitcoin lending business, no rehypothecation, right? Completely collateralized with Bitcoin. We're building an asset management business, you know, we have clients, you know, whether they want to have some kind of exposure to Bitcoin, that it has some protection on downside and other things. We're building that up in there. We have a very large, what's going to become, think about it as kind of like almost investment banking business, where we're engaging these conversations all the way from M&A, debt financing, and, you know, equity capital markets conversations with all the way small miners, hosts, and then public miners, right? And across the board. This is a business that it's very soon we're going to be announcing some very exciting things that are happening there. Goes back to being very close to everything else that we do, right? This gets us closer to investors in the industry, to companies in the industry, right? And long term, we're going to capitalize this in different kinds of ways, right? Either by commercial agreements or just by fee revenue based business as well. Super excited about that part. I think that part, and of course I own my own investment banking company a while back. This is what, you know, I know how to do. And, you know, there, I look at the opportunities and I see where we are, and I see the Bitcoin industry being, you know, in its infancy, very similar to what I saw like in Wall Street in the late 90s. And we had no idea, you know, how the derivatives market would take off. We had no idea how all of these products were actually developed, but we knew something was happening. A lot of talent was coming through, was coming in, right? It's the same here. Like, as I said before, the caliber of people coming here are people that traditionally would want to work for big banks, for big organizations. They don't want anymore because those businesses became utility business. It's hard to be intellectually challenged, right? They want to sit in a place where they are going to be intellectually challenged. And I don't think there's anywhere that gets close to the amount of, you know, if you want to put your brain to work, this is the place to be. You want to be in Bitcoin, yeah. There are 100 different things should be done.
You know why I think that is, Chava, just to make that comment. I think it's because there is no school for Bitcoin. I mean, there's now at Cornell, there's a course or something, but you cannot go anywhere and teach Bitcoin and learn like from a university or whatever. So it attracts all these people that are naturally open, can naturally challenge themselves, can naturally agree that they might have been wrong at some point or another in their life. And that's why I think running my own business it's so fun engaging with this community, engaging with the industry, because you deal with people who are on the same wavelength and they all bring their expertise from somewhere else, be it investment banking, be it, you know, energy professionals, be it engineers, be it designers, all of them bring their expertise, and this is what makes it so beautiful, right? There's not just Bitcoiner people out there. There's always, earlier you talked about all the people applying. All of those guys have different backgrounds, and they all bring a different profile, different insights into Bitcoin that can advance your own course, right? So that's why, I feel like that's such a great industry to work in as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, and this is why I'm here. I've never seen a more dynamic industry, and with great people like on the Bitcoin industry. So it's crazy. It's crazy from everything.
Last but not least, Rafa, does Bitcoin consume enough energy or not? What do you think?
That is a good question, man. I think it consumes just the right amount of energy today, right? Is it going to consume more in the future? For sure. You bet. And I want it to, because it will mean that we're going to have much more stable grid systems. Energy is actually going to become cheaper because of that. And humanity needs to consume more energy, not less energy, right? All civilizations, they thrive on energy. This is a point that Bitcoiners bring every time, which is absolutely true. The correlation between energy use and development, it's pretty much a straight line. So unless we want to go back to the dark ages and go back to a place that we all have much worse living standards than what we have right now, we're all going to consume more energy. And if we are going to consume more energy, let's do it in the right way. Let's do it so that the economic incentives are aligned. No better way to do that than with Bitcoin. And I think on that point, we haven't even seen also what's going to happen with in terms of energy trading aligned with Bitcoin and how interactive that's all going to be, right? Massive opportunity here as well, I think, in the long term.
I like it. Rafa, thank you so much for your time. Guys, if you learned anything, let me know. Ask all your questions. Leave all your comments below the video. I tried to go through X, or former Twitter, I should say, to pick out a few questions that you guys had left. Feel free to ask more. If you have mining sites, you have opportunities, hit me up with them. Let's talk about it. I can pre-filter. We can talk about what works and what doesn't. And maybe, Swan Mining will send you their ASICs sometime soon. Guys, again, if you learned something new, leave a like, leave a subscription on Swan's YouTube channel. There's an audio version as well if you have to run. But with that being said, tune in next time, next Sunday, when we talk about mining once more. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.